I think we're eternal optimists, and we can deal with public policy in a fresh light going forward.
Lawmakers prepare for a special session. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, April 16th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, new legislation that will require some insurers to cover autism.
It's a great starting point, but we need to get a lot of the self-insured and other insureds on board so that all of our kids can be covered.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
The Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com. The Association of Alaska School Boards believes in investing in early childhood development. It can produce great dividends for kids and our state. More information at aasb.org. This message sponsored by the Association of Alaska School Boards.
Governor Sean Parnell plans to introduce a new oil tax bill for state lawmakers to consider when they gavel into special session Wednesday afternoon. Parnell called a special session early this morning after lawmakers failed to pass an oil tax reform bill. He says he doesn't know if lawmakers will be able to come to agreement, but the special session is worth a try.
There's a new dynamic now at work that I think might lead to a compromise that could produce new production both now, but also in the future.
In the final days of the session, the Senate passed a bill giving tax breaks to producers that develop new oil fields. The House killed the measure. Parnell says he likes the idea, but wants to include existing fields as well.
So my concern there is that vast resources in our legacy fields will remain untapped, that they will remain locked in the ground, not being maximized for Alaskans.
The governor says he wants to encourage companies to develop hard-to-reach oil in their existing fields that could add 100,000 new barrels of oil a day to the pipeline in a few years. House Speaker Mike Chenault, a Republican from Kenai, says the House agrees with the governor. He says it isn't enough to fix just one piece of the pie.
But we're here to continue working to try to craft a tax regime in this state that brings investment into the state in order to fill the pipeline. That's our revenue stream, that's our blood.
But Senate leaders called the House's original approach a major giveaway to the oil companies. Senate President Gary Stevens says his chamber did the heavy lifting on oil tax reform during the regular session, only to see that work fail.
Now it's time, if others don't like our bill or that we've come up with, if they don't like our approach on simply on new oil, then it's time for someone else, either the governor or the House, to come forth with a bill and prove it. Show us how it's good for the people of Alaska.
Senators in the bipartisan working group expressed dismay that the House failed to pass their oil tax reform legislation. But Senator Johnny Ellis, a Democrat from Anchorage, says the special session may help foster an agreement.
I think we're eternal optimists, and we can deal with public policy in a fresh light going forward. I mean, we are the same people and there's the same big issues before us, but there's an opportunity to begin again and to put a renewed focus on the things that the governor is calling us to do.
Besides oil tax reform, the special session will address a bill meant to further advance an in-state natural gas pipeline project and a bill to strengthen penalties for people convicted of sex trafficking. In the final hours of the session, the legislature also passed a $2.9 billion capital budget. Governor Parnell says he's not likely to veto many community projects included in the bill, but Representative Mike Dugan, a Democrat from Anchorage, criticized his Republican colleagues for spending too much money.
They just can't seem to commit to saving any money for the future, which is, you know, not going to be a good thing for us, because sometime in the probably in the not too distant future, everything that goes up must come down.
Dugan proposed an amendment that failed that would have added $2 billion of the state's savings into the permanent fund. There's no short-term energy relief from the state legislature, but two bills approved by state lawmakers offer potential for new access to natural gas. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
A provision that would have given Alaskans vouchers for heating oil, electricity, or other energy sources did not pass. But Fairbanks Representative Steve Thompson says a bill that provides reimbursement for natural gas storage facilities did.
If you're bringing in LNG, liquid natural gas, you have to have some kind of LNG storage tanks for it. This provides for a credit or payback of up to 50% of whatever it costs to build that LNG storage tank, up to $15 million maximum.
Thompson says the program, originally designed specifically to benefit proposed plans to truck North Slope gas to Fairbanks, drew interest from many smaller communities and was expanded to include utilities statewide. He says legislators also approved reimbursement for natural gas exploration in new areas.
The Frontier Basin drilling tax credits, which involves six different basins and the Nanagas Basin, which is the closest to Fairbanks.
Thompson says the state will pay as much as $25 million to cover a portion of the cost of drilling up to four exploratory wells, no more than two in any one basin. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Lawmakers have passed a bill to require insurance companies to cover medically necessary treatment of autism, a disorder that affects sensory perceptions and the ability to communicate and interact with others. KMBA's Jacqueline Estes has more.
Autism can cause delayed or a lack of spoken language, repetitive activities such as hand flapping, and object fixations. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say an estimated 1 in 88 children have an autism spectrum disorder and say it affects more boys than girls. Although autism is not curable, the U.S. Surgeon General and the National Institute of Child Health, among others, say speech and language therapies and occupational, physical, and behavioral therapies can dramatically change outcomes for autistic children. Senator Johnny Ellis, Democrat of Anchorage, says early intervention can save a child from a life of intensive, sometimes institutional care.
Over the past several decades, intensive behavioral therapy has been shown to increase IQ, language skills, academic performance, and sociality. In turn, improved cognitive and social functioning resulting from such treatment has been shown to reduce long-term medical and other costs. There is the real possibility of a very promising future for children who are lucky enough to access these treatments.
A 2006 report by an autism ad hoc committee formed by the Governor's Council on Disabilities states that the cost of lifetime care for an Alaskan with autism who doesn't receive treatment is an estimated $3.2 million, which the report says early intervention can reduce by more than $1 million. Heidi Haas is president of the Autism Society for Alaska. She says to prepare autistic children for a normal life, therapy should start before the age of two, but she says they need skilled training and therapy in greater doses than a family can possibly provide.
You have to be integrated at all times and focusing at all times and getting them drawn into that world. It isn't just we're going to work on this for 2 hours. It's constantly all day long, you know, working with them, working on how they can communicate, working with them on how they can progress, those types of things.
Haas says the bill that's on the governor's desk for signature does not require insurance coverage for most Alaskans, but she says it's a step in the right direction.
The bill that we're looking at is just going to cover privately insured individuals. It will not cover groups with less than 20 employees, and it possibly could exempt groups with 21 to 50 employees. So when they originally talked about it being coverage for 15% of Alaskans, you know, we've gone down in that percentage slightly. We don't know the exact numbers, but, you know, it's a starting point. It's a great starting point. But we need to get a lot of the self-insured and other insureds on board so that all of our kids can be covered.
Opponents to the legislation have said care for people with autism is the responsibility of the parents and of schools, and have expressed concern the legislation will cause a substantial jump in insurance premiums. The Autism Society of America says, based on numbers from the 36 or so states that have enacted similar requirements, the average monthly insurance premium increased 31 cents per month. A Council for Affordable Health Insurance report states that premium rates increase 1 to 3% to cover autism. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
An FBI spokesman says there's little new that can be released in the investigation of a double homicide at a Coast Guard air station on Kodiak Island. Eric Gonzalez said today agents are not releasing details because it could affect the integrity of the investigation. The FBI is the lead agency in the shooting deaths of 41-year-old Petty Officer First Class James Hopkins and 51-year-old Richard Belisle. Hopkins was an electronics technician from Vergennes, Vermont. Belisle was a retired Coast Guard Chief Petty Officer who worked at the base as a civilian employee. Gonzalez says he can't comment on whether investigators have recovered a weapon or why law enforcement officials continue to say there is no direct threat to the community, even though no suspect is in custody. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, preparing for the summer wildfire season.
A wet winter is rarely followed by a wet summer, so we're expecting conditions to be a little drier around the state this summer.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com.
You can find APRN headlines and more online at alaskapublic.org. Local, national, and international news, upcoming events, and statewide community conversation. alaskapublic.org, connecting you to Alaska one story at a time.
The prosecutor who headed the Justice Department unit that bungled the corruption case against the late Senator Ted Stevens is leaving the government. In court papers filed in a case in Virginia, the department says William Welsh is departing for a job in the private sector. Recently, Welsh has overseen efforts to crack down on officials who leak government secrets. He stepped down as chief of the public integrity section in 2009 amid the controversy over the botched Stevens prosecution. A court-ordered investigation of that case concluded that prosecutors failed to turn over to Stevens' lawyers some information they had that was favorable to the defense. The University of Alaska Board of Regents held their spring meeting at the Kenai River campus in Soldotna late last week. Each year, the board travels to one of the university's satellite campuses for their April meeting. In addition to conducting regular business, these spring gatherings give the local campuses an opportunity to showcase their facilities and programs to the entire board. KDLL's Shaylin Cochran has more.
This was the first visit by the Regents to Kenai Peninsula College in nearly a decade. A lot has changed since then, and one of the first orders of business for the board was a groundbreaking ceremony for a new $14.5 million technical and career center and new student housing. KPC Director Gary Turner said during the ceremony that the new center wouldn't have been possible without support from the state legislature, and specifically the efforts of House Speaker Mike Chenault, who is in attendance, or at least a flattering likeness of him.
With these projects, it took somebody at the legislative level to make it happen. Speaker Mike Chenault, was the key to that rolling and starting. He's down in Juneau, as we all know, doing the people's business. Well, wait a minute. What do we have here? It's so good to see him, I'll tell you. So Mike is with us, at least we call him Flat Mike.
The cardboard cutout of Chenault stood by as members of the board donned hard hats and turned the first gold shovels full of dirt on the project. Also in attendance was the founding director of KPC, Clayton Brockle, and his wife, Jean. Now in his 80s, Brockle famously started KPC in 1963 with a briefcase, an office, and a trunk full of books in his 63 Chevy Biscayne. Following the groundbreaking ceremony, the crowd moved inside for another ceremony, this time unveiling a plaque honoring Brockle and the campus building named for him.
It's an awful hard on my ego because I realize that since I retired, all of this is being done without me. Not easy to take. Anyway, again, thank you very much.
Between tours of campus, public comments, and committee meetings, I was able to speak with Board Chair Pat Jacobson. She says the group looks forward to the annual spring meeting.
It's a critical element. We've always taken it very seriously, and that's why we do that April meeting. I'm from Kodiak. I've benefited by having the opportunity to take classes that I wouldn't otherwise have. And we understand. We get it. We take it very seriously.
A former teacher, Jacobson, says that aside from the ever-present need for more funding for schools, especially rural campuses, a great challenge is attracting and retaining quality post-secondary educators for Alaskans.
Some things the university can address, like trying to provide more and more opportunities with different classes or providing them by distance ed. And some things are beyond the control of the university. Housing conditions, for instance, for some of our rural teachers and salaries, things like that, that the university really has no control over at all.
The board did take action on expanding program offerings, including bachelor's and master's programs in special education and a Bachelor of Science degree in Information Systems at UA Southeast. Also approved was a $4 million ventilation system upgrade at the Kuskokwim campus of UAF, a decision on the design for a proposed $20 million expansion at the Mat-Su Valley campus was tabled until the June meeting. From Kenai, I'm Shaylin Cochran.
Wildfire scientists are anticipating a normal season over much of Alaska this summer. That would mean about 1 million acres burned. Recent years have seen an early start to fire season, but Alaska Interagency Coordination Center Fire Weather Program Manager Heidi Strader says that's less likely over much of Alaska this year.
We have a fairly large snowpack around most of the state, over 100% in most areas, particularly through the southern half of Alaska. We expect this is going to give us a later start this year, so though there will be some fire activity in May, most of the season won't really kick in until June, which is normal for Alaska.
Snowpack was slightly below normal for the middle to lower Tanana Valley and on the North Slope, but Strader says wet weather last fall means fuels had a higher moisture content going into the season. Other factors considered in wildfire forecasting are climate patterns like the Pacific Decadal Oscillation, the fluctuation of North Pacific Ocean water temperatures. It's currently in a cold phase, and Strader says that normally correlates with winter and summer extremes.
We do seem to note that a wet winter is rarely followed by a wet summer, so we're expecting conditions to be a little drier around the state this summer.
The shorter-term El Niño-La Niña Southern Pacific Ocean temperature shift also affects Alaska weather, but Strader says its impact is currently a big question mark.
We are in a very neutral phase right now, but still on the La Niña side. If we stay where we're at, our fire seasons tend to be fairly low, much like last summer. If we switch to a little more of an El Niño component, those are some of the years that we've seen our larger fire seasons, so we're keeping a close eye on that.
Strader says lightning and rain shower activity are always major wildfire drivers and are hard to forecast days out, let alone months prior to the season. She says coming up with a general outlook is important as managers gear up for the season and try to anticipate moving resources to higher risk areas in Alaska and outside. She says managers meet this week to prepare updated forecasts for Alaska and the western lower 48 for release later in the month.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for nearly 60 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. CrowleyAlaska.com.
Alaska Housing Finance Corporation offers home choice seminars that provide tools for making informed decisions about purchasing and financing a home, and loans tailored for first-time home buyers. There's more information at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
An Inupiat who is one of the leading opponents of Arctic offshore drilling is among this year's winners of a National Environmental Award. Caroline Cannon and four others on Monday won the Goldman Environmental Prize. Each winner will receive $150,000. Cannon is the former president of the Native Village of Point Hope. The tribal council has filed numerous lawsuits attempting to block Shell from drilling this summer. The prize was started in 1990 by the late Richard Goldman and his wife Rhoda. The foundation says the prize honors ordinary individuals who take extraordinary actions to protect the earth and its inhabitants. The town of Eagle is facing a bleak tourism future. Holland America has decided to eliminate the historic Yukon River community at the end of the Taylor Highway from its summer tour route. For more than 20 years, the tour company brought in excess of 200 tourists a day through Eagle, generating substantial income for the remote community that otherwise doesn't see much traffic. Spring flooding in 2009, followed by Taylor Highway slides and washouts the next year, kept Holland America out. The company delayed returning last year, and spokesman Eric Elverode says they've decided to permanently cut Eagle from their Alaska and Yukon tours.
The last 3 years have been a little bit difficult for us in terms of flooding in Eagle and the highway between Tok and Eagle. So we've had some challenges getting into Eagle with the motor coaches. So we've decided this year that we're going to make the plan to go from Tok into Dawson. So the what typically would have been a motor coach to Eagle and a boat down to Dawson is now going to be a motor coach from Tok into Dawson.
Eagle residents got news of Holland America's pullout last week, just as the Taylor Highway opened for the summer, a year after nearly $20 million in repairs. Eagle Historical Society and Museum Director Donna Westfall says Holland America's move is a major hit.
Well, it's really an economic disaster to the community. There, aside from the Historical Society, there are a number of people here who depend on the tourists to come in, and basically, we've been without them for 3 years, and our budgets are just leaking red ink. And right now, without them coming back, I don't know what the future holds.
Westfall says the nonprofit museum organization is running about $25,000 to $30,000 under budget, has cut 4 staff positions, and she's worried about losing her job. The lack of tourists has also eliminated summer tour guide jobs for Eagle teens and business for a group of locals who sell arts and crafts in downtown Eagle. Another familiar part of Holland America's presence in Eagle is also missing, the luxury catamaran tour boat, the Yukon Queen, which used to make daily runs between Eagle and Dawson, will remain dry docked in Dawson until the company decides what to do with it. The Eagle Historical Society and Museum Board met this week to talk about ways of spurring new tourism. $40 million of state money is included in the capital budget to buy a gravel road linking Petersburg to Cake. State Senator Bert Stedman added the line item in the budget. The project has drawn a mix of support and opposition from area residents. It could become a reality if Governor Parnell approves the funding. KFSK's Matt Lichtenstein has an update.
Senator Bert Stedman wants an 18-foot-wide gravel road with turnouts alongside the proposed electrical intertie between Petersburg and Cake.
We're trying to get a corridor to move goods and services to Cake and out of Cake, and also be able to have our power lines that go to Cake be able to be maintained along the road.
The State Department of Transportation has long pushed for a road to accompany the power line, except DOT planners have been pursuing a 2-lane paved highway that's been estimated to cost as much as $160 million. The Federal Highway Administration is beginning work on an environmental impact statement, which is expected to consider several options for the road's design and route. Stedman and the DOT prefer the controversial northern route on northern Kuprnoff Island. It would require a brief shuttle ferry to cross the Wrangell Narrows to and from Petersburg. The road itself would run along the foot of Petersburg Mountain right through the small roadless city of Kuprnoff, where Danatinas is mayor.
A number of our community members feel like it would irreparably change the character of the city of Kuprnoff if there were to be a road coming through. And of course, it depends how far the road comes. Say that there was a road all the way to the state dock, for example, and vehicles could travel on it. What would that do to kids who climb Petersburg Mountain every year? It would just make it a very different experience.
The Kuprnoff City Council has opposed a road in its community of about 30 residents. The northern route would continue roughly 51 miles to Cake on the northwest shore of Kuprnoff Island. Cake Mayor Henrich Kadake has no preference for the route. He thinks the road would benefit his town by lowering the cost of goods and allowing local seafood to be shipped out fresh through Petersburg. But Kadake emphasizes that the electrical connection to Petersburg is the town's top priority, and he does not want it delayed by a road project.
Most of the city council and myself, we
We're not, you know, against the road, but we're not pushing it real hard because we don't want it to interfere with our intertie.
The economically struggling community of about 580 people is dependent on expensive diesel fuel for electricity. The new intertie from Petersburg would connect Cake to far cheaper hydroelectric power.
The sooner we can get cheaper energy, the better off we'll be. The economy should start stabilizing and people, hopefully, we'll have people moving back home if we can get cheap energy here in Cake.
The Alaska Energy Authority and the Southeast Conference are working on that project, which is still in the environmental review stage. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
The Kobuk 440 wrapped up over the weekend in Kotzebue, with the first three mushers getting back to Kotzebue yesterday. Ken Anderson won at 11:47 yesterday morning, reaching the finish line with six dogs. Kobuk 440 timekeeper Liz Moore says the second place finisher is the Rookie of the Year, Scott Smith.
He's a rookie to this race, and he came in at 12:02 p.m., just about 15 minutes after Ken Anderson. He came in with 11 dogs. And Sigrid Ekren came in at third at 1:23 p.m. with nine dogs into Kotzebue.
10 teams ran this year. Moore says the trail conditions were good and there were no spring storms to contend with. She says the weather was great. The mushers will gather this evening in Kotzebue for the awards banquet. Moore says the purse was $50,200, paying first place at $12,000, second at $9,000, and third at $7,500. Mushers also get unique trophies for the race.
We provide local artwork to our mushers for their trophies. So they'll be going home with some amazing artwork from people throughout the region.
Moore says the Kobuk 440 has been running for two decades, and the organization is working to raise money for a larger payout to attract more mushers in future years. She says one of the main goals is to bring young people into the sport to teach them responsibility in dog handling, some regional history, and fitness.
We just want to make sure that we're continuing this tradition in the region and that we keep bringing people back to where mushing comes from, and it comes from places like Northwest Alaska and from our villages, which are really involved in running this race. We have lots of volunteers.
Jerry Riley was the Red Lantern finisher this year. He reached Kotzebue this morning at 8:15 with five dogs. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Jacqueline Estes in Anchorage, Shaylin Cochran in Kenai, and Matt Lichtenstein in Petersburg. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. The Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. Pebblepartnership.com.
And by
First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. Home, it's where you lay your head, eat home-cooked meals, and gather with friends. Home is where you grew up and learned about life. Alaska is home, and when you choose to violate someone by committing sexual assault, you harm them, and you harm yourself, your friends, your family, your home, and Alaska. No one deserves to be sexually assaulted, so make the right choice. Real Alaskans choose respect. This message brought to you by the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.